Thanks very much. Yes. Thank you to the organisers for inviting me. It's good to be, for me, I think, to be taken a bit out of my comfort zone, which is very much indeed the European level, and to learn about the activities of private equity companies also on the global level. I certainly started off by learning a whole new set of acronyms, which is always always nice. I'm just going to talk, having said that, I'm going to go straight back into my comfort zone in terms of my presentation and talk about Europe, or perhaps, let's say, the Europe and North America. A bit of background, the ETUI is an institution set up to support the trade unions at the European level. So we're a think tank or a research institute, essentially. We were asked to look into the issue of private equity going back to sort of 2006, 2007. So retrospectively, you can say the sort of top of the boom. You may remember, particularly in the UK, a lot of industrial action, unrest, strikes, also campaigns in the media against the practices of private equity at the time. This was set a little bit against the background of this wider debate about the financialization of our economies, of capitalism, and we did some research on that basis. I emphasize that because this is all obviously pre the crisis, and that's going to be the main body of what I say. I'm going to touch in the end a little bit on the crisis itself. We had essentially two main publications out of this. One is an issue of our quarterly journal transfer. I can pass this around afterwards, or you can have a look at it. You can't download it from the web, but you can get some information on the web. And the second thing was an academic article here in the Industrial Relations Journal. So let me run through that. Very simple overview. Quickly go through the private equity business model and give you some idea about the sort of scale of private equity over time, and then focus on the issues that were really a concern for working people and for unions, and review some of the academic evidence. I have quite a lot of detail on that on the slides. What I'll do is I'll just run through that very quickly, given the time, and then, as I say, talk a little bit about the crisis. Now, this is my conceptualization of the private equity business model. Perhaps I should start with a question. Does everybody feel that they know how the private equity business model works? If that, I would save myself 2 minutes by not explaining. I mean, everyone's talking about private equity. It may be, you know, useful also for the purposes of the meeting as a whole to get a bit on the same page and discuss a little bit how
it looks like people want to know.
I saw people nodding there. Yeah. I mean
don't freak out. Very scary slide.
Yeah, it's a bit of a scary slide. In fact, it's so scary I'm going to change my glasses here. That's how scary it is. Okay, you have the PE fund in the middle, as you'd expect. PE, obviously, private equity. Now there are two important actors in the PE fund. One is the GP, the general partner. This is the firm, actually the private equity firm, that stands behind the particular fund. They're essentially the owners and managers of the fund. The other important set of people are the LPs, the limited partners. They tend to be, your sort of commoner garden millionaires, and also, more importantly, actually, sort of institutional investors, notably, actually, pension funds, in parentheses, often run by workers or by trade unions. So very quickly, the private equity fund draws in capital, the vast proportion of the capital from the limited partners. The general partners also contribute a little bit. And with this capital, the private equity fund purchases controlling stakes in target companies. I've just put two here for simplicity, but it was stated, I think, in the previous presentation, an average of about 10 target companies typically, but it varies. Now, these companies rely typically on on leverage. So the fund purchases the companies and immediately takes out considerable leverage on the basis of the assets of the target company, just as you might do with your house, or you might have done a few years ago, at least in the UK. Or Ireland, not so much now. And this is the way a little bit the system works. You see the financial flows here. Plus one, it's probably fairly obvious. So it's probably not too much to let me sum up perhaps the business model also in contradistinction with other funds like hedge funds. Essentially, it's a capital gains model based on purchase, restructure, sell. So it's neither a short-term sort of trading strategy like hedge funds, nor is it a long-term sort of, you know, buy shares and hold them and invest them and reap the dividends. And the main aim is to you know, buy cheap and sell dear. You know, your favorite capitalist principle. And on the way, raise additional income from so-called dividend recapitalizations, which is essentially again borrowing more money from the banks and paying it out to the owners. In this case, the private equity company, and also to some extent by divesting assets of the company you just bought, up to and including asset stripping. So we're talking about illiquid investments, typically lasting around 5 years, but there's again quite a lot of variation on that. Obviously high risk, given the leverage that is taken on, and as we'll see, it tends to be cyclically very sensitive. It tends to involve the replacement of existing managers in the company. Normally, when private equity firms go in, they change the existing management structures to varying extents, sometimes just the top people, sometimes quite a fundamental revision of manufacturing, of management capacity. It's important from a worker's point of view because that, you know, over time, you know, industrial relations, traditions, and practices build up within a company, and of course, once private equity comes in, these sort of longer term, often implicit contracts between management and labour tend to get, you know, thrown in the waste paper bin. Here you see some figures on the rise of private equity. I mean, the particular numbers aren't perhaps so important. What is important is the rise. If you look at the line, this is the total number of deals in Europe. So this peaked here just before the crisis at 18 billion euros in 2006-2007. So a very substantial volume of trading. You notice, of course, the very rapid decline since the crisis peaked. What you also notice is that the number of deals increased in the pre-crisis period, but not nearly as much as the value of the takeovers. What that tells you is that the average size of the takeovers increased very substantially in the run-up to the crisis. And this is going back to what I said at the start. This is when, you know, people really started to take notice, when sort of, you know, large high street companies, you know, like Boots, for example, or the AA in the UK context, were taken over, not just some obscure, you know, widget making family firm. Okay, why was this all of great concern? For a series of reasons. I'll be very quick here because I'm going to go over this. Prime concerns were about, from the union point of view, about working conditions and employment security. A second concern was about collective bargaining institutions and the rights of workers to participate in decision-making in the companies. So subsidiary risks and concerns about taxation, so more sort of public finance point of view. Perhaps trying to go a bit faster, also this risk of an increasing instability of both individual firms at the micro level and perhaps arguably also, of, as it were, capitalism generally, if lots of firms are carrying more leverage. Okay, this is a problem just of interest for researchers, really. There are a whole lot of methodological difficulties in actually measuring private equity in a serious way. You can pick, of course, individual case studies. That's quite easy to do. If you want to come to some sort of more general conclusion, then you have to have sort of matched samples of private equity companies and non-private equity companies. And there's a whole load of methodological issues which we can talk about in the discussion if you're interested in those sort of things. Why it's actually very difficult to come to conclusions. And may I say, this is one of the reasons why the sort of, if you like, ideological debate's a very posh word, a polite word, conflict or controversy about private equity sort of rumbles on, because, behind all these methodological problems, of course, you can hide any number of dubious or not so dubious studies. Okay, the slides we made available, so you're going to have here the literature references and the, on the one side some people say this, on the other side some people say that. So I'll just in each case focus on the conclusions. In fact, we, in terms of the value addition, I don't say value creation, I talk about value addition. The evidence seems to be that indeed private equity run companies do add value in a sense, and that's why, of course, they manage to transfer large amounts of money to the pockets of the general managers who run the firms, including some of the best known billionaires around the planet. So there is some evidence out there that that this happens. The big question is, is this genuine value creation in the positive sense of, we take a badly performing company, we restructure it, it's now a well performing company, so we've added value in that normal sense of the word, or we've created value, or is it we've added value by paying less tax, screwing the workers, is it a sort of value creation or a value appropriation by on the part of private equity? And that's, I think, that where the debate really lies. The findings on the rates of return, again, this is a very controversial issue. The private equity companies argue that they have very high rates of return for their investors because they want to attract, of course, the investment of pension funds and rich people, etc., etc. The findings here are very mixed. It seems indeed that if you can get onto in inverted commas, successful private equity company, then you can, over an extended period, as an investor, actually earn decent returns. On the average, though, the findings seem to suggest that the returns are very good to the owners of the private equity companies themselves, and not so much to the investors. Largely, that's because of the very high fees that are charged. That was on the first slide. You, as an investor, you pay a lot of money to actually have a private equity company manage your money for you, or invest your money for you. Just a quick note, this is all based on studies conducted prior to the crisis, right? So there's an issue now about what's going to happen in the crisis, to which I'll come back. Perhaps the most critical issue from the point of view of workers and of unions has been the impact of unemployment. There's been a whole load of studies showing, a number of studies showing actually beneficial employment effects. It turns out that most of these studies were conducted by or financed by the private equity industry itself. And because of the methodological problems involved in making these comparisons, one should be very sceptical about those. The best study, in my view, is the one conducted by the World Economic Forum, which is a fairly business oriented organization, certainly not a union linked or sort of leftist radical organization by any means. And they conducted a large study conducted by some quite serious American academics who did find quite substantial negative employment effects on the workers. Again, to be fair, there is a counterfactual problem here. I mean, if private equity companies are taking over firms that are underperforming, you can make arguments that, well, you know, this is a price that has to be paid to keep these companies afloat, right? So, again, you know, I'm sorry if the message isn't as clear and as strident as some of you may like, but indeed it is actually quite hard to make these assessments. The findings, I'm having to speed up a little bit, the findings on wages and working conditions are more limited, actually somewhat more negative. There seems to be indeed very substantial downward pressure on wages and working conditions in portfolio companies of private equity firms. So part of the answer why these companies can add value is that they're sort of taking value away from the employees in the company. There is quite a lot of case study evidence also in the transfer issue I mentioned here. We have some quite a lot of case studies, notably from Germany. The findings are also mildly negative. I mean, although private equity is a very sort of Anglo-Saxon way to manage companies, it does seem that when they take over portfolio companies in places like Germany, with a very specific industrial relations system, if you like, to put it in a short way, based on a sort of stakeholder model of capitalism, in fact, they're actually reluctant to totally destroy that system just because it's too costly. So at least where unions are reasonably strong in these companies, these models are maintained. But below that, at the micro level, there are certainly numerous examples of established collective bargaining processes being bypassed. Essentially, the problem often tends to be that workers approach management to have the usual sort of consultations that they're used to having with previous management. The managers say, sorry, we can't do that anymore because we're owned by the private equity company, go and talk to them. And then the workers' representatives go and talk to the private equity company and they say, what do you want? We're just a financial investment vehicle, right? We don't manage the company. So the workers' representatives are sort of chasing from one to the other. It's actually very difficult for them to find an interlocutor for their grievances and their discussions. The evidence is gratifyingly clear on taxation. Private equity exploits the tax system for what it can get, and on various number of measures, notably by the fact that the interest they pay on debt is tax deductible. It's let me put it in this way: a private equity is a very tax efficient way of running your business, right? So, from workers' perspective, you know, it's a very a nefarious way of running a business because, of course, it's again, you know, adding value by essentially diverting money that would otherwise go to finance, you know, schools and hospitals or you know, tribal weapons or whatever. But anyway, to finance government spending. It's essentially, you know, going into the pockets, if you like, of private equity companies. There's a whole debate about this issue of short-termism and investment. And to be honest, I couldn't find any very serious analyses of this. What I've done here is simply list the arguments for and against. The chairman's tapping his foot already, so I'll be very quick. The essential argument is, you know, if you like, on the union side, well, okay, you know, you guys don't have a long-term perspective. You're coming in here for 3, 4, 5 years. You just want to get out quick and make a fuss. But the counter-argument is that, you know, at least we're here for 4 or 5 years, right? And you know, if you think of a company that's listed on the stock exchange, you know, where large sections of the investor base are essentially, you know, people sitting in front of their computer screen going in and out of companies on the basis of, you know, from 1 minute to the next. You know, you can argue that private equity is actually a strategic investor. So it depends a little bit, who, what your basis of comparison is. Let me perhaps skip the rest of that slide just to give you a flavour of the debate. It's a very hard one, I think, actually, a very hard one. Let me perhaps skip that summary just to say a little word. If you can give me 2 minutes. Just to say a little word about the crisis. Now, first of all, a little bit of, if you like, more sort of theoretical reflection. Why the crises are bad for companies, full stop, clearly. But why might it be particularly bad for private equity-owned companies? Well, they're highly leveraged, right? So they're dependent on access. They're dependent on access to the capital markets, which, as we know, has often dried up. Whereas 2 years ago, everybody said, well, this can't happen. You know, we don't have any of our economic models where capital dries up, so capital can't dry up. We've seen that's not the case. Unlike equity-based models where, you know, if the company's having a bad phase, you just say, okay, well, we don't pay our dividend for 2 years, and then we'll start paying again when we make profits. You know, if you take on debt, then you're obliged to service that debt, you know, every 6 months usually, or every year or whatever. Yeah. As I say, the whole model is based on entry, restructure, exit. Now, if you're doing that in a rising stock market, you know, actually you have to be pretty stupid not to make a lot of money, right? If the stock market as a whole is going up, you know, unless you really screw the company up in a bad way, you're at least going to get, you know, your money out at the end, and probably quite a bit more. In the context of a dramatic decline in the overall stock market, of course you've got to be very good just to break even. And I have some figures which showed in the crisis how stock markets fell by 40%. So, you know, quite hard. And this is how at the very end how companies' financing costs increased. They shot up from, you know, 1% above what the government pays to 6-7% at the height of the crisis. So you can see this is a bit of a nasty, you know, nasty scenario if you're a private equity company. I put up this slide again, which I had earlier, which just to remind you of the very sharp decline in private equity. What that essentially said was that private equity in the crisis sort of hoarded its money, and you saw a fairly sudden stop in the buyout activity. You're already seeing this is more recent data for a thing we're planning to do. You're already seeing an uptick now in receiverships. That's this this white column at the bottom there. Unfortunately, we don't have the figures for 2009 yet. But this is actually quite a CMBOR. It's actually quite a private equity friendly institute. Is noting the pronounced cyclicality of failures and bankruptcies by of private equity owned companies. So we can expect, you know, there to be blood to be blood on the floor essentially going forward. But this is more anecdotal evidence here. This is not really, I wouldn't say this is based on real research. This is just some stuff, you know, looking a little bit through media reports since the crisis broke. In fact, everybody was really very worried. Even the private, I mean, I had conversations with some of these private equity people. Even they were extremely worried, really, when the crisis hit after Lehman Brothers. I think on the basis of the sort of, you know, trends that I just showed you with the stock prices and the interest rates going up. In fact, we haven't yet seen, and I emphasise this, we haven't yet seen a really serious wave of bankruptcies going beyond that you'd find amongst, let's say, normal companies. There was a study by Moody's at the end of 2009 which didn't find actually higher bankruptcies on the part of private equity companies. Now, there's a number of reasons for this. One is that at the top of the boom, the banks were desperate to lend to private equity, and the banks the private equity companies managed to get very good deals from the banks, including various options if they weren't able to pay to defer payment and stuff. So what does that mean? It essentially means the company doesn't go out of business, which is a nice thing. Unfortunately, the banks take a hit, which is not such a good thing, especially if you're then a taxpayer who has to come and help support the banks. So again, it's a bit the old story of privatizing profits and socializing losses. When private equity companies take over a firm, they normally have a sort of war fund, which they normally plan to invest in real capital. I think in a lot of cases, what they simply did was then use that capital to stave off the bankruptcy of the company. There is a last possibility, and one which, of course, is rather worrying, and that is that you ain't seen nothing yet, as the Americans say. When you take out a corporate loan, normally you don't have to start paying the principal back for several years. You just have to pay interest on the loan, and in some cases, you can even defer the interest. So it may be that the worst is yet to come, and I have a figure from this Moody's study again, which is this figure here, and you see, again, without worrying too much about the precise numbers here, but let me tell you, they're in the US dollar billions. You see this rapid rise in the repayment obligations of portfolio companies owned by private equity. I think this is just in the US. Watch this space. We seem to be sort of okay for now, but going forward, I think we will see again quite a lot more blood on the floor before private equity perhaps reinvents itself again. Now, I mean, we are seeing some clever companies jumping in when stock markets have now recovered, but when stock markets were very low down in the spring of this year. You saw a renewed wave of buying. Again, these things haven't shown up in the data yet, really. But I don't think private equity is going away soon. I think it's something we're going to have to live with in the coming years as well. Sorry to have gone a bit too long, but thank you.
Thanks, Andrew.